Well, Cam, how do you feel now that we're finally out of the month of March?
Just hoping for a better month, I guess. I don't really know where, knock on wood, this month can go from here. But March did feel like it was taking forever. I don't know what it was, but that the last couple weeks there drug on forever. So yeah, hopefully new month, new vibes. Hopefully we get some changes a little bit and stuff starts getting better.
Hopefully March is better. I don't know if it will, or hopefully April is better, I guess I should say. If you had to bet right now, when you add in what happened in the state with the tornadoes, like it would be hard for it to be worse, right? You'd have to get a little bit better here, at least in Tennessee, because Tennessee had, you know, a really, really bad month of March.
Yeah, it would be hard to top that, and it should be one of those things where the only way to go is up from here, and hopefully it gets better. Fingers crossed, I guess. I'm not sure how much more else the state or country can take at this point.
I haven't seen any big April Fool's jokes today, right?
I haven't either.
Hold on. Before you go, I just realized Cody missed April Fool's last year, too.
Did he really?
Because I told everybody that he was fired last year.
Oh.
That was my April Fool's joke to people.
Wow.
I should have said Cody had the corona. That's what I should have said.
Yeah.
I should have said that today instead of a flat tire. I should have said Cody has the rona. Huh.
He missed last year because
Cody was no longer with us and everyone was freaking out last year.
Maybe he's going to show up later and we don't know it.
Is there just something about April Fool's that he has to take the day off? Like, is he afraid to get pranked, or does he just go out and do some pranking for someone else? Or is this his April Fool's joke to me?
I feel like he's afraid of getting pranked.
I think he's
held up in his apartment right now, frightened of the possibility of being pranked.
I haven't seen anything yet, right, in terms of April Fool's jokes?
No, I think everybody's kind of keeping it low-key today.
Today's not the day to joke around?
Yeah, it's been a serious couple months. I think people are like, we don't really need all these wild pranks going around. I'm sure you'll get some, like, YouTubers or something that post some stuff that
makes you irrationally
mad about how dumb their stuff is, but...
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think anybody, like, here, there's been nothing happened here yet, so...
Okay. Well, everyone stay on your toes. It is April Fool's, but maybe everyone is just kind of... It's kind of like St. Patrick's Day. I didn't get pinched at all on St. Patrick's Day.
Yeah.
Everyone's like, I don't want to mess with you today. I don't want to get within 6 feet, but also, like, we got a lot of stuff going on. Now's not the time to be pinching people.
Exactly. I think the nation's coming together to realize this is not the time to celebrate April Fool's Day. We'll see, though. Day's still young.
So we had another cancellation. No surprise. It was, you know, kind of breaking news on Monday, but Wimbledon went ahead and said, hey, we're not playing this year. No pushback. We're just canceling for the first time since World War II. I maintain I'm really confused by this as to why they would do this. Tennis, to me, makes the most sense to play. And it's not even like, I mean, has England been hit hard with the Rona?
Oh.
They're not one of the countries I think of in terms of being ransacked by. Like, if you were playing in France or Italy or Spain, like if it was over in Italy or something, I would understand, like, hey, no need for sports, but... I guess the UK.
Ooh, I mean,
have they been hit as hard as everyone else? I guess
I haven't seen numbers, but I remember like they closed McDonald's there and like things like that.
Yeah, they haven't had it easy so far. 29,000 cases and 2,300 deaths. So they might be hitting the point where it's getting ready to get bad because they've had 563 deaths today. So maybe they'll hit that point. Maybe they're on the same trajectory as everyone else.
I know. I just remember, like, McDonald's closed over there, things like that, and we haven't hit that point. So I'm assuming it's not easy for them over there. But I agree. Yeah, tennis, you're pretty separate for as far as sports go.
So I guess England is now getting hit hard by it, and apparently some of their test kits delivered today were contaminated by the coronavirus. So like there is a that's what's tough is everyone's like now starts sharing these kits and you know China sending stuff over and we're like nah I'm not sure if I want to use that because I mean the U.S. Bloomberg I saw tweeted out first. I don't know if they were the ones that broke it or what. They have reported that hey guys guess what breaking news China was lying. China was lying about everything. They hadn't been on the up and up in terms of their cases or deaths.
Yep.
Which, obvious to everyone?
I think everybody knew, but I think the fact that they like put out the articles and stuff now makes it official, I guess.
Yeah, but I mean, like, there's, you know. I don't know what the repercussions will be. Probably nothing because China and
I
all.
I mean, yeah, what can we do?
Yeah, what do you do? Just like start a war?
Bad China, yeah.
That doesn't seem like to the proper answer. But, I mean, I do feel like the rest of the world should look and say, hey, like, we kind of thought you had this under control, so it wasn't as bad as it actually might be because the figures yesterday coming from the White House, they were not really backing down from that 100,000 to 200,000 death range. And that was a that was in part a result over people thinking, well, China slowed it down. China's done a really good job, and you know that's just a false sense of security. So maybe it makes sense in that lens, especially if it continues to get worse in England.
I'm kind of surprised that they're full out just canceling stuff. It's like that far out. Like I thought they'd at least like consider, you know, start with postponing.
Well, it'd be hard to postpone with Wimbledon because the rest of the tennis schedule plays off of, you know, their target dates. And it's not like you could postpone it till next year, like the Olympics, because you have the 2021 Wimbledon. So, you know, they don't have the same luxury as the NBA who's like, hey, we got, you know, 3 months basically we can work with, which the latest update there is that it will be mid-June at the earliest when they can get back. So they've started trying to make some contingency plans on salary and just looking at dates. They have a little bit more flexibility than a tennis tournament where, you know, you can't push back Wimbledon to the weekend of the French Open because if the French Open was to play, like, it makes it a little bit tougher. But I just looked and saw tennis, like, you know, 1v1, you are 6 feet away.
Yeah.
But maybe it doesn't look good. Maybe it doesn't look good to have sports going on. And that's, you know, that's another, like, philosophical question that sports leagues are going to have to answer. Mm-hmm. Is, like, if you have these guys playing sports and taking medical personnel away and taking resources away, is that okay? Now, some people would say, yeah, we need entertainment. Like, I think Wimbledon, if they would have played, would have had pretty big ratings. Just because, I mean, people are watching the eSport NASCAR League. Like, I like watching the Grand Slams already, but I would imagine just any sports fan, anybody that likes to gamble, anybody that likes any type of competitive competition would have found themselves giving tennis a chance. But, again, it comes down to a decision of do you want to take those resources away because you still probably have to have – I don't know if you have to have cops and security there. I don't know. If you would have to have that, if there's no fans, but you would at least have to have doctors on hand and nurses and medical personnel.
Yeah, just in case, yeah.
Just in case one of those guys get hurt and to constantly be testing. So is it a bad look optically to have resources being given away for competitive events for millions of dollars for entertainment when, you know, people are going to be fighting for their lives, apparently, in England, like they are the rest of the world. Tough decision.
Yeah. It's necessarily not a good look because you will get those people that are like, what are you doing? Like, you could be doing this. You could be doing this. Like, instead of using the money to put on the tournament, you could have donated to this. Like, it's just you get all those kind of people nitpicking it and attacking it.
Well, that's what Mark Cuban was saying today about the NBA. He's like, look, I know people use my quote of hoping we'd be the under of June as me, like, reporting news. He's like, I was just saying what I thought, but I am not speaking for the league. And was basically like, we have to hope in 90, you know, 30, 60, 90 days is how he said it, that we have accessible tests for everyone. Because you can't waste tests on NBA players for them to go play
mm-hmm.
while other people are waiting to be tested. So, like, we have to get all of that in line so that we could keep these players tested to see how they are feeling, to see if they are sick, as we hopefully put them in a bubble to play sports. But we still have to have tests on hand, and we just can't take away that from people right now. He said hopefully 30, 60, 90 days. We've made far advancements both in controlling the virus but also with supplies. You know, Ford yesterday, I believe, said they hope to have 50,000 ventilators made ASAP. Test kits becoming more and more, you know, available in terms of especially their turnaround, right? Like,
yeah.
No longer are you supposed to be waiting 7 days. There apparently are some that you can get out within a day, within 15 minutes even. I don't know about the accuracy of those. I'm not a doctor, but we are making advancements for that.
You would hope if they've released them that the accuracy is on par with the other tests at least. But yeah, no, it's great that they're getting the faster stuff out because it just, I think, I don't know if speed this process up is the right term, but you finally start getting, you know, more people the help they need.
Wimbledon was set to run June 29th. So pulling the plug fairly early. I mean, we'll say basically, we'll call it 3 months, right? I mean, it's
yeah.
2 months and 29 days. We'll just call it 3 months. I get that there's some logistical things you have to put in place and planning. But it seems a little surprising that they wouldn't ride this out. Like, I don't know the need. Again, maybe there's something logistically I'm unaware of, but I don't see the need to cancel this so far in advance.
Yeah, that's my thing. It just seems a little early, in my opinion. But yeah, I think that kind of shows us where the projections are headed. Almost like the fact that people are canceling this far out.
And apparently, the people involved with tennis. Dirk Hordorf, the German Tennis Federation vice president, you know, he's talking about the French Open. People are mad at the French Open. Just like, hey, you guys need to go ahead and start making plans as well to do this.
Yeah, it's...
They stunned the tennis world by unilaterally postponing the clay court Grand Slam from May until late September because of the pandemic. So I guess people are mad that they're basically like, hey, we're going to try to get this done in September. They came under heavy fire from tennis players around the world at the lack of communication as the new dates clashed with several other events already featuring on the calendar. So I guess, people were already scheduled to be certain places, and they just went ahead and said, we're moving to September without really asking anybody.
Huh,
which yeah. I could really go. I mean, like, to be honest, like if we can get this going and playing in late September, and we still have like the NBA and the NFL and college football, late September will be a great time.
Yeah,
the French Open's one of those that play like different times, right? So I mean, like mm-hmm. we might even get that early in the morning to
yeah,
take us just through sports the entire day. Like that could be good.
That would be a fun month.
The men's ATP tour and the WTA. Require their players to participate at the 4 Grand Slam championships. So apparently you have to be there. So these other events that are scheduled are just kind of going to get, big fish, small pond, big bank, little bank, that whole thing. Like, they're going to get swallowed up.
Mm.
Now they're saying that they believe that the French Open will not be relocated as intended. They will be deprived of the points, and they will degenerate into a chaos event, he said. So they're mad at the French Open. So we'll see. That's your Corona update so far. Wimbledon falls victim. No big surprise. They had talked about that on Monday, but now it's official. Stick with us. This is Talk Sports on Fan Run Radio.
Drink what you truly want with light and refresh.
This might have led, this quarantine, this house arrest, this social distancing might have led to the easiest punishment for driving while intoxicated for John Jones. He's on 1 year of supervised probation, and as a part of his plea deal, he will serve 96 hours under house arrest.
Oh no!
Basically, he's going to have to wear an ankle monitor for 96 hours to show that he doesn't leave his residence unless he has permission. So, maybe the easiest punishment that I've seen.
Yeah, he's basically just being all of us, but wearing an ankle monitor.
Now, the ankle monitor probably would lead to some discomfort.
Yeah.
I would imagine I wouldn't like wearing an ankle monitor, but you'd probably get used to it. But I don't know if that judge has a sense of humor or what. But, yeah, 96 hours of house arrest seems not that bad.
Yeah, at least, yeah, like you said, right now in today's climate, absolutely not. That's best case scenario for him, probably.
He had tweeted 10 days ago, first time in history we can save the human race by laying in front of the TV and doing nothing. Let's not screw this up.
Well, there he is now doing his good for society unwillingly.
He should have been staying in the house and he wouldn't have found himself in trouble, but either way. It does, like, where are you at in terms of wanting to get out? How are you feeling? Are you restless? Because I've seen a lot of people get restless, and a lot of people are saying, you know, this is tough for people mentally. Like, this really is. It's tough for me physically because I haven't left to go do any, like, I can't go to the gym. I don't like running outside. It's bad for my knees, me being a heavy guy. I don't like running. I like to go into the gym to go on the elliptical, like, less resistance, or, you know, less pressure on the knees. So it's been bad for me physically. I'm probably going to come out of this the heaviest I've ever been in my life. Maybe. I don't know. So physically, it's taking a toll on me. Mentally, though, I'm cool. I'm Gucci. I'm good. Nothing bothering me. I know for some people, though, like, they're getting really hit with the cabin fever, like wanting to get out, wanting to go to the bars, wanting to go to a restaurant, wanting to do something like that. Where are you at, Cam, in terms of your stay-home-edness meter?
I'm good personally. I'm fine with it. I can adapt. I would like to go out because, like, you know, Tuesdays are like my trivia night. So every time I get to like a Tuesday, I'm just like, and I get kind of like sad again because I'm like, man, I gotta sit here and not do anything. But
yeah. By the way, I feel like those trivia companies really, really dropped the ball in terms of like they could do some live streaming.
Yeah.
Not to give away like free $1 million ideas to these trivia companies. Probably not $1 million ideas, but like, you know, some goodwill.
No, they definitely could have done something, yeah.
Open up like a tip jar. Like, people would probably tip the trivia people. Like, you could, you know, just pony up and, you know, come together for like a cash prize or like a gift card to somewhere. Like, that's a chance for some goodwill for their partners to like kind of keep going on with this trivia.
Yeah.
In my opinion, they kind of dropped the ball there because people at home on the internet would probably like a Zoom? How many people can fit in these Zooms, by the way? I haven't tried the Zoom yet. Have you?
I haven't either, but since they do it for school, I assume pretty decent amount.
Probably only 20. I don't know. Like, school could be like 20, yeah. 10, 15 people. I don't know. You could do it in sections. I don't know. Maybe you could have a lot of people, maybe not on camera, but watching the Zoom and then, you know, could chat in.
Yeah. I'm not exactly sure how it works, but.
You could do some type of trivia.
Absolutely.
That would have served a need. I'm cool, though. I like staying at home. I've used this time to really just mow through. Like I said, I've been knocking out movies that I need to watch left and right, catching up. But I know some people are really struggling with the idea of, like, they need to get about with a routine. People need to get to work, things like that. It is tough. It is, you know, weighing on people mentally. I was curious where you were on that.
I'm fine, man. I think it helps us, too, that we come in here.
Yeah,
I
no,
think
that
helps.
That's 100% true. That's 100% accurate. I do look forward to these moments where we come in the studio and at least get out of the house and can get some type of personal interaction.
Yeah, I think this definitely helps because it makes it seem almost more normal for us.
Okay.
Yeah,
I mean,
so
my day
cool.
hasn't changed too much. Like, wake up, watch some TV, come to the show, go home, watch some TV. Like I said, sometimes I would go to the gym. Sometimes I would go out to eat. Sometimes I would go to the bar, do something like that. But, you know, just the whole no sports thing.
Yeah, that's the worst part for me, too.
And I will say, like, not being able to – I haven't gone home to see, like, my family. So that's been kind of tough. That's been my biggest adjustment is not being able to go home.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people are in that situation, too, where they don't want to risk it or anything like that. So, yeah, everybody's kind of staying put to where they are. Unless you already, like, you know, the college kids went home when they got sent home. But besides that, yeah, everybody's kind of sent and put.
I do wonder how it is for the college-age students, though.
Yeah.
I mean, like, as you saw with a lot of them, like, they still went on spring break, so.
Yeah.
They're still trying to live a little bit, I guess, but, you know.
I still pass a few in the fort when I'm going back home and stuff.
Yeah, but I'd imagine, like, the pool days are canceled.
Yeah, yeah.
The summer pool days, like, at your apartment complex, I was thinking about that, probably canceled, right?
For everybody. I saw some people at the pool this past weekend.
Really?
Yeah, but what a lot of the pools around here did was they took all, like, the chairs and stuff.
So you just had to stand?
So, like, you gotta, like, bring your own towel or chair or something. So it's discouraging most people, but you'll still get those some people that went out and, you know, I saw some, like, Snapchat stories and stuff of people at the pool. So, yeah, not everybody's sitting at home completely, so.
It's got to the point where even. It's gotten to the point where people are, like I said, struggling. It's got to the point where people are ready to get out, to the point where people are ready to get back to work. It's tough. Then you have the other side that wants the people to be responsible socially. And it happened in the NFL with a unlikely person. He went to town on the NFL. I'll tell you what he said after the break and who it was. I was surprised to see this. Ooh. Stick with us. It's Talk Sports on Fan Run Radio. Back on the program, a little bit of breaking news. We have Dolly Parton stepping up, donating $1 million to Vanderbilt towards the research towards finding a cure for the coronavirus. She tweeted out, my longtime friend, Dr. Najee Abumrad, who's been involved in research at Vanderbilt for many years, informed me that they were making some exciting advancements towards research of the coronavirus. For a cure, I am making a $1 million donation to Vanderbilt towards that research and to encourage people that can afford it to make donations. So, Dolly trying to help Vanderbilt, try to help them find a cure for the Rona. I said that a surprising name took some shots at the Shield. Adam Schefter was no holds barred last night on Scott Van Pelt as he talked about how crazy it is that the NFL is trying to pretend like everything is fine. Like, they're trying to do the draft to stay on track. But he's like, look, guys, there's not going to be any OTAs. There's not going to be any off-season camps. Like, you got to need to go ahead and accept that, and says that the draft is only happening on time, as he puts it, quote, only through the sheer force and determination and ... He waited like 4 seconds and said, lack of foresight. From the NFL. They are determined to put this on, quote, while there is carnage in the street. Basically, like, people are dying, carnage in the street. Yeah, I haven't seen anything actually in the streets. I haven't seen any anybody dying out in the streets, but, like, you know, it's just a form of expression. You've had some people try to, like, go outside hospitals to be like, oh, everyone keeps saying it's a war zone at the hospital. Look, no one's even out here. And you're like, bro, it's a hospital. People are inside.
Yeah, that's where the magic happens.
Yeah, like the parking lot probably isn't going to be a war zone. And it's also been really frustrating seeing people downplay hospitals and what they're going through by saying, well, I know someone who works at this hospital and nothing's happening at all. Okay, there's other hospitals
Congrats.
In the world.
Yeah.
There's other hospitals in the world. I walked outside and no one got murdered in my backyard, so murder must not exist. No, people get killed. People get murdered. Just because you don't see it, just because it doesn't affect you, you haven't been murdered, doesn't mean that it doesn't happen. But I was surprised to see Adam Schefter say that. And last week, the NFL said, look, the draft is going on business as usual, and put out the warning to teams. Like, hey, don't talk bad about this. Nothing good comes from you speaking out against this. There will be punishment. So no teams have been able to come out and say this is a bad idea. But Adam Schefter, which I don't know where you rank him at, Cam, but I think of him in the top 20 in terms of faces of the NFL. And really, when I think of the NFL, he's probably, you know, outside of my favorite team and just being biased of my favorite team. Adam Schefter, where does he rank in terms of stars of the NFL? Because for me, he'd be top 10 or 15 when I just think of the NFL and think of people that represent the NFL. He's high on my list.
No, I agree. Like, if I'm ever in the situation where, like, oh, I need to see if, like, something happened in the NFL, I always go to his Twitter page.
Right.
Like, he's the guy you go to for the information.
He's been, you know, he's been the you know, the face of NFL Network for a while, and then he moved to ESPN, and he's like the newsbreaker. Like, I mean, yeah. Sure, Jay Glazer and Rappaport come out a couple of times, but especially in Rappaport's case, he's usually, you know, 10, 15, 20 seconds behind Adam Schefter in terms of breaking news. So, it, like I said, I think of him in the top 10, top 15 in terms of recognizable faces and people when I think about the NFL, and in large part because some of the stars are retired, but and some of the stars are nameless and so interchangeable. But still, Adam Schefter, one way or the other, is kind of one of the faces of the NFL, in my opinion. And here he is just taking the shield to task.
And it's not like the NFL can fine him.
Yeah, they can't do anything to him. Like, you know, Goodell, I guess, could theoretically. I mean, on one hand, yes. On one hand, no. I don't know if you're familiar with Bill Simmons' story. Cam, you know Bill Simmons at all?
Yeah, I know Bill Simmons.
You familiar, like, you know, him leaving ESPN? Like, he pretty much left ESPN because he wouldn't shut up about the NFL. And, like, he just kept taking Roger Goodell to task and was just, you know, whining and complaining and, you know, whistleblowing. Whatever you want to say, it was basically like, Goodell's full of bleep. Goodell is a hypocrite. Goodell is the worst commissioner in sports. Mm-hmm. And then eventually ESPN's like, stop it. And Bill Simmons' like, no. And Bill Simmons ended up getting fired from ESPN. So he can't find Schefter, but I wonder what Goodell will say if Schefter makes this admission to talk about the NFL, quote, ignoring carnage in the street. That's a pretty damning statement. Like,
yeah, that's heavy. That's heavy.
The lack of foresight, I think you could get by with. But then you go on and say they're determined to put this on while there is, quote, carnage in the street. That is painting them as someone who is naive, someone who is dumb or lacking foresight, but also someone who just doesn't care. Like, it's one thing to call somebody dumb, in my opinion. It's one thing to say you're ignorant. When I say dumb, I mean ignorant. Like, ignorant of the ramifications. Like, the NFL not thinking this through in terms of putting the draft on. It's another thing to say they see the carnage in the street and they're still doing this. Because that paints a picture. When I think of carnage in the street, I think of warfare. I think of riots. I think of, you know, just things that people should be aware of.
Yeah, you see, like, looting in the street, things like that, like cars on fire flipped over.
Right. Like, that's the image that kind of is painted whenever I hear carnage in the street. And like I said, this is one of the 10, 15 biggest faces of the NFL.
Yeah, no. He has influence.
Like, who, if we're ranking the faces of the NFL, who are you going with? Like, I think right now, is it Brady? Is Brady still number one? Just in terms of recognizable faces for people?
Yeah.
Importance to the league, all that stuff. Like, Brady is still number one. I would honestly say Belichick's probably in the top three as well. Rodgers.
Yeah.
If I'm power ranking them,
Mahomes,
it'd be like,
Mahomes probably up there now.
Yeah, I would still put Brady and Rodgers ahead of Mahomes in terms of just faces of the league. Like, if you're talking about who's a better player, obviously not. Like, Mahomes has passed both of those guys and has passed probably Belichick in terms of importance in the league. But, you know, those three guys are kind of the mainstay. Mahomes and Lamar, probably, and Russell Wilson. You know, all three of those guys come after that. Andy Reid probably deserves some credit. Jerry Jones, got to give Jerry Jones props.
Yep.
But outside of that, like, I don't know how many more players I would get to that would say, yeah, slam dunk. That guy makes
everybody would know him.
That guy comes to my mind before Adam Schefter. And I'm not even talking about the average fan recognizability or whatever, although that might be true too, because, you know, helmets and stuff.
Yeah, oh yeah. And I think that, like, even like the casual fringe NFL fans all know Adam Schefter.
Right, from watching the draft, from watching coverage. Recognizable face. On, you know, and ESPN hasn't been a big partner with the NFL really since the Bill Simmons stuff. Like, some people say that, some people theorize that is why the ESPN playoff game has always been so bad and why the Monday Night Football games have always been so bad, because the NFL is sticking it back to ESPN for all the negative coverage. And now here you have another guy. You know, we'll see how far Schefter goes when taking this to task. But I was surprised to see him do it.
Yeah, that is a little surprising. He's been tweeting out and retweeting a bunch of stuff about the virus, though. So you can tell he's kind of passionate about
trying to stop it.
Yeah, about this. So I guess he's finally was just like, hey, like, the NFL's being a little absurd by doing this, but
Well, are they, though? Because I don't know if I agree. Like, I mean,
I think that's fine.
Like I said, it's a little tough. Although, like, you know, the same argument we have with Wimbledon, Cam, mm-hmm. about doctors and stuff. Like, there are some doctors and stuff that are going to have to do physicals, I guess, on these players. But is that enough of a percentage to actually get mad about? Because I feel like the draft is, you know, you're not going to get hurt. It's one thing if they're playing games and you had nurses and, you know, someone's getting a concussion, someone's having a fatal injury, needs to go to the hospital. Like, that's one thing. And obviously that would be worst case scenario. But just having the draft where people are, well, you know, not even walking across stage, like, there's zero injury concern here.
Yeah, no, I think the draft is fine to do it the way they're doing it. Because, yeah, there's going to be very few interactions with people. They're already doing, like, the video interviews with players, so it's not like they're flying players out to do these interviews. They're just sitting down and, you know, over Skype, video chat, FaceTime, whatever, and interviewing the players there. So they're still getting to do the interview process. Yeah, no pro days is going to probably hurt a few people. But also, yeah, everything else is fine. Like, it's going to be so remote that I don't really see an issue with it. And I think it kind of just helps them in the long run when it gets closer to the season. Or even getting back to normal, I wouldn't even say season, getting to kind of the off season. Once teams already have their draft picks and things like that, it kind of speeds up that process. If you had to, like, move it back, it'd be a whole other thing where you have to run through the draft late, try and squeeze in some off season. It just kind of speeds up the coming back part of this.
How do you think the players feel?
The
players that are set to be drafted, do you think they feel robbed of, like, a moment of walking across stage? Or do you think they're like, hey, let's get this over with. I want to get on a team. I want to sign contracts. I want to get paid. Like,
I think it probably depends on – I'd say the average player, no. They just want to be – they know it's still going to be on TV. They're still going to get to spend it with their family or whoever small group they're with. So I think they'll be fine with that. I think it's going to hurt more of the either, like, small school guys or the fringe drafted guys that, like, you don't get that extra pro day and things like that to see them.
Yeah.
So I think you're going to get some of those, like, who may have maybe one of the best years for undrafted free agents.
Okay.
Maybe some of those missed guys you just barely miss on the draft and, you know, you don't have a ton of film on and they come in and produce.
Potentially. Yeah. Yeah. Adam Schefter just came out and said, hey, NFL, what are you doing? I disagree. I think the draft is okay. Like, the free agency was huge. That was business as usual. That helped us a lot kind of pretend like everything was normal for a little bit. I don't think that helped spread the virus anywhere. I don't think, you know, we were hurt by that. I think the draft going on as scheduled is okay.
Yeah. I agree.
I think that's okay.
They're not really putting too many people at risk by doing it this way. So, yeah, I think there's no problem with the draft.
I would listen to the idea of we got a tweeter writing in. Burns asked, can we get an over-under on how many draft picks will contract the virus due to their draft parties? Well, that angle of it, admittedly, was not one I had considered. So I was going to make that joke about in terms of injuries. It was like, except like if Big Brother or – your dad tackles you to the ground or girlfriend tackles you to the ground after you get drafted, maybe you could get injured. But I guess I should have taken it one more step and said, you know, if we Skype into these people and they're having cookouts and barbecues with, you know, 40 people there to celebrate, because that is one of the big parts of the draft, right, in terms of being there with your family, having your crew there.
And, if you're going to invite your family, then you're going to get the fringe, like the outside your, you know, immediate family. Gonna be, oh, I want to be a part of this, too.
Anyone
trying to get
a jump start on getting in the circle, getting in the entourage is going
to
be there.
So you either have to, it's going to be kind of on the players if they're going to, you know, put a limit on who comes through. Or if not, that's a possibility for sure.
That's a interesting angle. Hour one in the books. We'll kick off hour two with headlines. We'll tag team them. Stick with us to talk sports on Fan Run Radio. From L.A. Mike Leach landed a pretty big quarterback, a ESPN top 300 player, number 163 on 247's composite score. Sawyer Robertson out of Lubbock, Texas.
Ooh, he's the 51st overall player on ESPN.
I feel like, do people like ESPN's rankings? I don't know if
I don't always.
I feel like they're always way off. I don't know who's ended up being more accurate or what, but it seems like they're always just way off of what everyone else is doing.
Yeah, they and I think they do something where they like don't really rank JUCO people. Is that one of the things they do?
I have no clue.
Yeah, they're all over the place sometimes, but I'm sure Leach is using their rankings right now compared to 247 to like tell people he's got the 51st ranked recruit, but either way, guy.
Yeah, I mean, like if the ranking has a big difference, and that's 100 spot difference. But either way, like a top 300 player is a top 300 player.
Yep. Yeah, ESPN has this guy's the second highest ranked prospect for the program since 2015.
Behind what, Jamal Peters?
Yeah.
He's thrown for 87 touchdowns and more than 7,000 yards through his first 3 years as a quarterback. That's a pretty big deal. Not only like Mike Leach getting a quarterback, but Mike Leach being able to recruit big time players from Texas. Like that seems important too, because obviously Mike Leach had a large part of his career was spent in Texas at Texas Tech. So you bring that into account. Also, like this upcoming year, they'll have KJ Costello if we play football. KJ Costello from Stanford.
Mm-hmm. He's a solid quarterback. Solid guy.
We'll see. I mean, like Mike Leach, at least attracting quarterbacks, right? Like I would imagine there was some type of a demand for KJ Costello. Maybe not. But Leach is going to try to turn him into a effective quarterback at Mississippi State. Does this change how you judge Mike Leach's potential success in the SEC?
Well, yeah, this was the big question, was if he could recruit at the level he needed to play with the big boys at Mississippi State. And for him, this is a good starting sign, because his offense kind of depends on the quarterback. So if he can get the big-time quarterbacks to come to his school, that's a game-changer. Even if you look at some of the QBs he's had, a lot of them weren't always, like, the biggest names.
Right.
And he made them look great. Like, he got, like, the people like Gardner Minshew is now in the NFL starting for a team. People like that where they worked really well in his system.
But none of those guys were highly rated either. So, have we seen him with a highly rated quarterback? Like, I feel like this has to be the best.
This is probably the highest rated guy he's brought in. I can't think of anybody off the top of my head.
I would think this would be it, right?
Yeah, and if he can do it with the average quarterbacks, this would be kind of one of those things you think he can do it even better with the bigger name guy.
You would think. You would think. And it's not like, the NFL where you have to worry about your salary cap. I mean, I guess maybe there's some booster money. You only have so much Bagman money you can spend. But, this isn't like you take the quarterback now, you're going to hurt the rest of your team. It's actually the opposite in college football. Usually if you get a big quarterback in place, you have a better chance of getting some big-time receivers who want to come play.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. It attracts the other skill positions because, they want to play with the quarterback. And if the quarterback kind of almost solidifies your team. So it's a lot easier to pitch the recruits. And you're like, we got this quarterback here. We can do this, this, and this. Come play for our team. Things like that. So, this is a good start for him for sure. Like, this is what you wanted to see if he could do. And far, so good, I guess.
I still want to see him get a couple big linemen, like especially on the defensive line. Like, quarterback, I don't know if I would say that I knew he would recruit at a good level, but like you said, Cam, he's made it work with average quarterbacks. So you would think he would either get a good transfer or get somebody that he could continue to succeed in his offense. I still have questions about the recruiting just in the sense of can you recruit enough dogs on defense, especially on the defensive line, which Mississippi State's put some defensive linemen in the NFL. Like, Jeffrey Simmons, first-round pick, so, like, there's some pedigree there. But that's what I want to see. As Dell tweets in, we as Vol fans only take the ESPN rankings when it comes to Trey Smith. He was the number one overall recruit. Which, I don't know if I would say they hit that one in terms of him being the best player in that class. I don't know who else is in that class, but Trey Smith has been really, really damn good, right?
He's been a good player.
See if you can find those numbers. See if you can find the class where ESPN ranked him. I guess that would be the class of. Would that be 2017? I believe it'd be 2017, I believe. 17, 18, 19. I think that's how that works. Because Trey Smith's been really damn good. I wonder if he is the best player But either way, I wouldn't judge that as a miss. So, okay, so far, ESPN, 1-for-1. 1-for-1, I give them credit. If Mike Leach can recruit, I still don't know if this one quarterback's going to do anything because, you know, Mississippi State is going to, like I said, the defense seems to be the biggest issue for the way he plays, which at Washington State, that wasn't the case. At Washington State, you know, the year, not last year, last year was a train wreck, but the year before, Washington State had a top, I want to say a top 25 defense in terms of how they actually played defense, like in terms of defensive efficiency and stuff. Like, their defense was pretty good the year that they went 10-2 or whatever it was.
Yeah.
The question will be, can he do that in the SEC?
Yeah, no, that's a big question. And, yeah, like you said, he does need to get some more recruits in there. Trey Smith was 2017.
That's what I thought. Okay, oh, yeah. That's what I said, I believe.
Okay.
He's played 3 years. So he was number one. Who are some of the names around him right there on ESPN's?
Isaiah Wilson, who's the offensive tackle that went to Georgia.
And he is going to be a second-round pick, I want to say, in the mock draft I saw.
Yeah, I think so.
I think they had the Titans getting him in the second round, I believe, is where they had.
Yeah.
He was good in college, so, I mean, he's definitely someone who has played out for them.
He was the number two guy. Jalen Phillips, outside linebacker, went to UCLA. He's probably a mid-round draft guy, if I remember right.
Okay.
Marvin Wilson, D-tackle, Florida State. Don't know a ton about him.
Seems like they really put an emphasis on linemen on ESPN's rankings.
Yeah, the first.
Or is that how all the rankings are at the top? I don't know.
Then number five is Dylan Moses, who went to Bama, of course. He was listed as an athlete here. But you got Sean Wade, corner of Ohio State, and then Jeffrey Okuda.
They nailed Okuda.
So, yeah, he'll be a top pick. And then
Isaiah Wilson is projected to be the Titans pick in the second round at 61. Okay. And that Okuda guy, I believe, was all the way up to number three.
Yeah,
so
it is
cool to see whenever those players actually pan out, like, to be – I mean, Okuda, I guess, would be the best of that class in terms of NFL potential.
Yeah, rounding out the top 10.
You know, Chase Young wasn't in there, right? Was Chase Young?
Or would he have been? He's not in the top 10.
But I guess he would have been in that class, though, right? So
yeah, he was number 27.
Okay.
So they not quite nailed him. But,
he was a five-star, though. Like, you know, if you're top 32, you're automatically a five-star, I'm pretty sure. So
not on ESPN. He's listed as a four-star.
Oh, really? I thought the rankings
did top five for the first 15.
Okay. I thought the five-star ranking was basically like you should be a first-round pick. But either way.
Yeah, but, yeah, rounding out the top 10 was Alex Leatherwood, tackle at Bama. Cam Akers, running back, Florida State.
That guy's been disappointing. I saw Cam Akers, and I've seen him show up. Was like, you know, on
he
the
was
upcoming
really good
draft
one
board.
Year, but yeah.
On the upcoming draft board, they had him graded as like the the sixth or seventh best running back in the draft, and I was like, man, I wanted Cam Akers at Tennessee so bad.
Yeah, he was good for like a year, but also Florida State sucking didn't really help.
He kind of went through a lot of what the good players that came to Tennessee went through, like the last decade or so of like. Went to a big-time school, thought he was going to have success, and just had turmoil and disappointment. Yep. Poor Cam Akers went to Florida State at the worst possible time.
Yeah, and number 10 was D'Angelo Gibbs.
Okay.
So that was the top 10.
So, yeah, I mean, Tennessee added him. Hopefully we get to play football and we get to see D'Angelo Gibbs play this upcoming year and see that type of athlete.
Jerry Judy was number 20 in this class behind T. Higgins at 18.
I feel like ESPN did pretty good there.
Yeah.
Of the guys you mentioned, they all seem to be pretty good. I mean, there's a couple busts, I'm sure, but of the top 25, I mean, if they had Chase Young in the top 25 and Judy and
Donovan Peoples-Jones, the Michigan receiver, he'll go mid-round somewhere.
Yeah, I would say they almost missed with him.
Najee Harris was number 11.
I go back and forth on Najee.
Caleb
was Najee the guy that showed up to, like, he wasn't going to sign anywhere. He was just going to show up on campus. That was him, right? It was like him in Michigan.
Yeah,
it was him in Michigan, right? And then he's just like, I'm just going to show up to whatever school I go to.
Yeah. No, they did pretty good with this ranking.
Maybe we should be paying attention to ESPN. I don't know.
I'm seeing some other like first round names on here too. Yeah. Huh.
Maybe we should be giving them some credit. So Mississippi State lands a quarterback. It's a good start for Mike Leach. Like I said, I'm wondering if he can get some dogs in the front seven. That's what I'm wondering. That's what's going to determine his success at Mississippi State, or maybe not. Maybe they'll just spread the ball around, score enough points, and they can figure some things out on defense. And I don't know.
It'll be interesting to see if he goes kind of the way. I'm assuming he's going to change it up from, like, the Washington State ways where he went the smaller, faster lineman.
Yeah.
I'm assuming he's going to try and get bigger.
We tried that at Tennessee, and that didn't go well. Like, that was what Butch Jones tried to do when he got here, was go with the the quick, athletic lineman.
Yeah.
That'll be faster than the big guys on the defense. And you're like, hey, the problem here in the SEC, guys, is, like, the big, scary guys on the defense are also really fast. Like,
yeah.
if you recruit the smaller offensive lineman, it just means you're going to get over.
They're going to catch up to you and then just push you over.
You're just going to get overpowered. Like, you're not going to be able to beat them with speed. That's not how this works in the SEC. So I would advise Mike Leach to not go that route. Do you have any animals ready for us to go this week?
I'm almost there. I need one more animal. I'm gonna
all right, well,
go through
we'll do that
and then
at
I'll
the
be
end
good.
Of hour two. We'll do that at the end of hour two then. Stick with us as Talk Sports on Fan Run Radio. Saturday. You know, you talk about what a quarterback does. That's why so many people love Peyton Manning at Tennessee. And, you know, he never won a national championship here, but I don't think many people would think that Tennessee would have won a national championship had he not been at Tennessee.
I agree. Yeah, he brought players in.
Right.
Regardless.
Like,
yeah.
Right. You know, him being here helps recruit other people.
Evan, yeah, so yeah, he had a good team around him, and even once he left, the team around was just so good because, yeah, they wanted to come play with Peyton, and, you know, they were still here, and it kind of just residual effects and magic season.
Yeah, that helps your program just tremendously, even in, like, you know, away from the years that your quarterback is here.
Yeah, no, I think that's probably the biggest position, you know, you can get a big-name guy of, and it residually just attracts everybody else. Because, yeah, everybody knows that you need a quarterback to win games. So,
despite not winning the championship, I would imagine that most people would say he was the biggest recruit of the 90s, right? The biggest player at Tennessee.
Yeah.
Throughout the 90s.
Yeah, absolutely.
That type of stuff can get your program on track. And like I said, I don't know if Tennessee has the same success they would have had after he had left had he not been there. I think that's common sense when it comes to that. If you could pick, I was asked by a listener, he wanted us to kind of weigh in on this, and as we were getting ready for Animal Facts later, you know, his question was, pick one of these things to that never happens, and it was Chris Lofton never plays at Tennessee, Peyton Manning never plays at Tennessee, or Grant Williams never plays at Tennessee. Like, if you had to pick one of those, which one would it be, Cam? Like, I don't think anybody's picking Peyton to not have played at Tennessee, because, like I said, I think he just set up so much success for you in the 90s and the first couple of years of the 2000s, and went a long way to putting Tennessee, at least for a certain generation, on the map nationally. So I don't think anyone would pick that.
Yeah, I think Peyton's safe in that regard.
Chris Lofton or Grant Williams, if you had to pick one to never happen, which one would you have picked?
I'd probably say Grant Williams, because I think Lofton kind of helped put Tennessee basketball on the map as being a program that was, you know, a successful program.
Yeah, for this hypothetical, your line of thinking is correct so far. We'll see what happens next year.
Yeah.
Because Grant Williams has the potential to have kick-started the resurgence, right?
Absolutely.
In terms of if Tennessee gets this talented team together, there's actually college basketball in the fall, and Tennessee can be a top 10 team and hopefully kind of jumpstart another resurgence of Tennessee, because we've seen – during Grant Williams' time, I mean, you know, back-to-back SEC Player of the Year, You made a Sweet 16. You won a regular season championship. That by itself, not going to be good enough. But if Tennessee can get back on track and be a consistent program, because this year wasn't good enough, right? Like, no. Rick Barnes and the basketball team, they got a pass. Rona kind of took that away, like any judging of the season. You didn't, you know, you didn't get to finish your season. You didn't officially make the NIT. You didn't officially get, not, you know, have a disappointing loss in the SEC tournament or whatever. So you kind of lost judgment there. It's almost a year that people won't even remember what happened in the regular season. You will really just remember, well, you'll remember Dayton was good.
Yeah.
You'll have that memory. Like, yeah, Dayton was good. That was your Dayton was really good. Outside of that, probably not much. But if Tennessee comes back next year and is really good and can sustain that for two or three more years, and Tennessee can get to an Elite Eight or, my God, get to their first Final Four, then maybe Grant Williams becomes the answer here over Chris Lofton.
Yeah, I agree. But, yeah, we just haven't seen how it's going to play out yet.
But for what you're saying, obviously, yeah, like you know Lofton came here, jump-started the Bruce era. Bruce probably doesn't have as much success as he had here immediately had Lofton already not been at Tennessee.
Yeah, I mean, like you said, I think Peyton's safe. He just did so much for the football program.
Right.
Back in the 90s, you wouldn't want to mess that up. Yeah, I think that's where I'd go with this one. But, yeah, like you said, Grant does have the potential to start the next generation and the next, you know. He did put our, like, I won't say he didn't put our team on the map because he definitely did.
No, yeah, we're number one in the country. And, like, I mean, without Grant Williams, this, you know, this last, the Rick Barnes era, let's just call it the Rick Barnes era, probably looks a lot different.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
Right? Like, I mean, even with Grant Williams, Tennessee only has made the tournament two of Rick Barnes's 5 years.
Yeah.
Like, Rick Barnes is batting 40% in terms of getting his team in the tournament here at Tennessee.
Yeah, when you look at, so if Grant wouldn't have been here, we would have been talking about how we just, like, took Texas's scraps of taking Rick Barnes and why did we do that, yada.
And, like, you know, post-Konzo, post-Donnie Tindall, Tennessee basketball could have really sunk to some bad depths.
Yeah, oh, absolutely.
We would just think of that drastically different. And I'll even say, like, we'll throw year one out for Barnes just because it was such a wreck. But,
yeah,
you know, from year two to five to, you know, be batting 50% and even making the tournament, that's tough, in my opinion. That's tough.
Yeah, that would have been tough to stomach.
But the peak of being number one in the country, the peak of having a guy like Grant Williams who won, you know, back-to-back SEC Player of the Year, like, that goes a long way. That goes a long way. And I don't think, like I said, that maybe both things. Like, what would have happened had Chris Lofton never played at Tennessee? Could you have still found success with Bruce Pearl? Because, I mean, he has found success at Auburn, and I'm sure at Auburn they'd be like, yeah, well, if he didn't have Bryce Brown, he still would have found a way to be successful, right? Like, he still would have found a way to be good, so maybe Bruce would have still had success.
I agree, but also you wouldn't get the moments like the shot over KD and that, which I think is one of those things that makes you, like, yeah, you would have success, but that's one of the things that, like, really put some national spotlight on you.
And won over basketball fans, like, have a player like Lofton who could just rain from three, I mean, that was pretty fun to have as a fan. So that gets you in the community, enthralled in the community whenever you have exciting players that could do, you know, something better than almost anybody else in the entire country. I thought that was a interesting conversation.
Yeah, and that's a good hypothetical.
As of right now, I guess you have to say you would pick that Grant never plays at Tennessee.
Yeah. I mean, you still would have Schofield and Bone, I guess, in this scenario.
Yeah, but I think that's a team that misses the tournament, and, like, you would be, like, your program would be in shambles if you did. I sincerely feel like if Rick Barnes had not had Grant Williams here, the program would be in shambles, and Tennessee might already be looking for a new coach. Through five years, like if Grant Williams wasn't here and Grant Williams wasn't as special as he was, I think you would have been looking for a new coach. I think Bruce would have had more success without Lofton than Barnes would have had without Grant. It seems crazy to say that, but you know what? I'm going to change my mind.
You know,
I'm going to say I would rather have Lofton never played here than Grant not have played here. It seems just like icky to say, though. It just seems icky to say. Can I say that? Does it feel right?
Yeah,
to
no.
Say?
Like you said, it makes sense. Like, I think Bruce still would have found success.
Right.
Just because that's who he is and kind of.
They would have found some gritty players
here. Proven he can do
here.
That
yeah.
everywhere else.
Right. And you look, I mean, it's the Peyton argument to an extent, but, like, Tennessee had more success without Lofton.
Yeah.
Postseason-wise, at least, right? I mean, like, he wasn't on the Elite Eight team. Now, Grant, he was on the, you know, the team that went number one in the country, but so was Grant Williams. Lofton and Grant went to the same round of the tournament.
Yeah.
Sweet 16. Yeah. And really, like, the... Really, that loss, like, really, Lofton and Grant had similar success, like, in the postseason as well, right? Like, Lofton went to a Sweet 16 where they lost to Louisville. And I guess they got knocked out in the second round by, was it Butler that knocked them out in the second round?
Yeah.
Or was it Wichita State? One of the mid-majors knocked Tennessee out of in the second round. So there's been some similarities there, like, you know, with the Loyola Chicago thing, so... The parallel's pretty close there, but I think I'm gonna change my opinion. I think I would say I'd rather Chris Lofton.
So, that almost comes down to, do you trust Bruce to still win more or Rick Barnes to win more?
I trust Bruce.
Yeah,
more.
I would. Okay, yeah, I agree with that statement.
I trust that Bruce would have found a way to still light up the fan base with his energy and get Tennessee basketball where it needed to be.
Yeah.
And I sincerely feel like if Grant Williams had not been here for Rick Barnes, he would have probably already been gone. And the program would have never would
have
still
have this class
would
coming
still,
in.
Well, that plus would still be waiting to recover from like a 6 or 7 year dark period.
You may be right with that.
That's my official answer. All right, what animals you got for us coming up?
All right, I got the proboscis monkey.
I've never heard of that, but the proboscis monkey.
Yep, the fusa.
Proboscis monkey. The what?
The fusa.
What the? Are you making these animals up?
Nope, these are real animals.
Okay.
And the goblin shark.
I got really excited when you said goblin. Then I lost interest when you said shark.
He's a shark.
Yeah. I was like, what is this thing going to look like? Oh, it's a shark. Okay. All right, we'll take a trip to Cam's Animal Kingdom coming up next.
Smith?
I'm Steve Irwin. Holy smokes, that was too close. Danger, danger, danger.
Alright, let's take a trip to Cam's Animal Kingdom. What animal we got up first?
Alright, we got the proboscis monkey.
Okay, the proboscis monkey.
If you want to know how to spell it, it's P-R-O-B-O-S-C-I-S, monkey. So proboscis, if you haven't guessed, has something to do with its nose.
Give me that one more time.
P-R-O-B-O-S-C-I-S.
Okay, proboscis monkey.
So these things are known for their giant noses, which is actually only a thing the males have. It's said to be an echo chamber, which makes them have some really loud calls, which they mainly use as a warning to attract mates, you know, just kind of seem big and bad by being really loud. So the nose kind of just amplifies their sounds and their calls. They are actually the most aquatic of all primates. So these monkeys are only native to Borneo and, the islands, Pacific islands out there. But they are the most aquatic primates on the planet. They actually have webbed fingers and toes, and they're known to really love water. They're known to, like, jump off of tree branches from really high up and belly flop into rivers, things like that. crocodiles are one of their main predators, so that's partially why they have the web feet.
These
so they can
are
swim
so
pretty well.
Ugly.
Yeah. They got like a big like pot belly too, and they're what? Just characters, but
where did this nose come from?
It's not sure. They're only native to Borneo, so like I guess it just evolved over there. But like
is
I
there
said,
any like thing like defense wise?
No,
or?
It's just to make their calls louder. It like amplifies their sounds.
Okay.
So, and it's only the males have it. They use it to attract mates. Males are about like 50 to 56 pounds, but the females are only about 20 pounds. So big size difference there. They got the big pot belly because they have a lot of different stuff in their stomach that helps digest. They eat a bunch of like leaves, seeds, fruits, things like that. So they have a lot of different stuff going on in their stomach to help them digest all that. But yeah, no, they are one of the few primates that's known to swim a lot. They really love water, fast swimmer, good swimmers. They literally only spend their time almost always in just trees or in the water.
Okay.
They rarely like actually go on land. Very arboreal, very aquatic. Really interesting looking monkeys. But yeah, only native to Borneo.
Where's Borneo at?
The Pacific Islands.
Okay.
Like kind of near like Indonesia, things
never
like that.
Never heard of that country before.
Yeah, well, only place you can find these monkeys.
I'm never going to go because I don't want to see these monkeys.
Yeah, they're pretty ugly looking things, but
okay.
Really interesting monkeys.
I give this animal, I'm going to start ranking these animals, I give this animal a 2 out of 10.
Okay. Crappy animal.
Yeah, it could... 2 out of 10, this will be on the like, oh wow, I love this animal, we must protect them at all costs.
Yeah.
That's a 10. A 1 is wouldn't care if they go extinct. I give this one a 2.
Okay. So at least they're not extinct. All right, so next up we got the Fusa.
Oh my god, the little baby monkey's even uglier.
Oh jeez.
Have you seen them as babies?
I did not see the baby pictures.
It's even uglier. What is wrong with this thing?
Yeah, they're not the best looking monkeys.
1.5.
They're losing points. Let's move on to the Fusa then. So the Fusa.
Can you spell that for me too?
Fossa.
The Fusa, okay.
These are native to Madagascar. They are the largest predator of Madagascar. They get about 6 feet long, but that's because their tails are so long.
Okay.
But yeah, they are originally thought to be a primitive form of cat, but it is now known they are more closely related to mongoose.
A mongoose, but like a couple of these pictures make them look like kitties too.
Yeah, they're like a cat mongoose dog looking mixture thing.
That's exactly what I was gonna say. I was gonna say this looks like if you took a cat and a dog and mixed them together.
Yeah.
If you took a cat and like my wiener dog Frank,
yep.
And you mix them together, I feel like you would get the Fusa.
Yeah, they're
long like wiener dogs.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's what it is. This is what would happen if you would take Frank and mate him with a cat that's the same color as him.
But yeah, they're only native to Madagascar. They're the largest predator on Madagascar, and they hunt things like birds, fish, and their favorite prey is lemurs. They hunt the lemurs on Madagascar, and they're one of the few animals that can do that where they're quick enough and big enough to, you know, take down the lemurs, who are also only native to Madagascar. So that's kind of one of those like really precise like a predator-prey relationship, because those are the only place you can find these two animals interacting. But yeah, they have semi-retractable claws, kind of like cats. They're really good climbers from jumping from branch to branch. That's one of the things that helps them hunt the lemurs down.
Okay.
And their scientific name means hidden anus, because they have an anal flap that protects their anus.
Excuse me? Say that one more time?
Their scientific name means hidden anus.
So Fusa means hidden anus?
Well, that's just its normal name. But like the scientific name, which is like their like Latin name, means hidden anus.
There a reason why? Like on the evolution
they
chart?
Just have a...
Why you would need a hidden anus?
Not that I've seen, but they have an anal flap that protects their anus. So they're named hidden anus. But yeah, only find those in Madagascar.
Were they in the movie, Madagascar?
They were, actually. They're at the end when they're trying to escape off the island, Yeah, they were trying to help the lion hunt the zebra. But
all right, so quick rundown. What do these things eat?
Lemurs, birds, fish, literally anything smaller than them. But okay. Lemurs are their favorite.
So are they mean then, I guess?
They're not really the people. They're really skittish to people. But like, yeah, they're aggressive. They're a predator.
I took a little bit off of my ranking because they're so mean.
Okay.
But I go with 6. I'll go with the 6.
Fusa's serviceable animal.
Once I realize that they're kind of a dog cat. Hybrid.
Yeah, they're
some of these
solid.
Pictures. Some of these pictures are ugly. Some of these pictures are like, oh, okay, I can see it. It's kind of cute.
Yeah, it kind of depends on the angle.
It needs
sure.
an angle. It is an Instagram thought for sure. It depends on the angle.
Yep. Oh yeah.
All right. What's up? Last we
goblin
got the goblin shark. I gotta be honest. This is gonna be tough for me to give this thing anything above a 3. But
all
let's
right,
see.
So yeah, it's usually found off the coast of Japan. Is usually where they find it. They really prefer really deep depths. They usually aren't found outside of 900 to 4,000, about 300 feet down in the ocean.
Goblin shark is ugly.
Yeah. They're sometimes called the vampire shark because they're always so deep because they avoid sunlight by how deep they are.
The goblin shark looks inbred. We should call it the Alabama shark.
It's the only shark in its family of sharks, though, but
This shark looks so stupid.
They're not sure what that long protruding thing is actually for. Scientists have no idea what it's used for.
Probably stabbing people.
Well,
stabbing
it's too soft.
Oh, it's
so
too soft?
Like, yeah,
well,
it's
in some of these
really
pictures, they look sharp, but okay.
Yeah, so it's not really made for stabbing.
Are they blind? Can they
shark.
See?
They have really small eyes, but yeah, they don't use them super well because there's no light.
Is that why?
Deep. Yeah.
Would the nose be to, like, bump into things?
Well, one of the leading theories is it has, like, the electromagnetic stuff that most sharks use to kind of detect prey off of. They can see electronic fields.
Okay.
So they think that could be it. And kind of like how...
Can sharks swim backwards?
No.
I didn't think
very
so.
Very few can.
So even if it bumped into something, it couldn't, like, back up. It would
yeah,
just
there's
be...
there's very few that can. Most sharks have to keep swimming breathe anyways, and they can only go forward. There is a few, though, that can go backwards, like nurse sharks, for example. This gets pretty decent size. It gets about 13 feet long. Its jaw actually almost, like, protrudes out of its mouth when it attacks prey. It kind of, like, launches its jaw forward, kind of like the aliens in Alien. Like, kind of like that kind of thing. They just kind of shoot their mouth forward at about 10 feet a second. So, pretty quick strike, but they're slow-moving sharks, which is kind of why they do that. Helps them grab the prey before they go anywhere. They eat crabs, squid, and fish, slow-moving fish they can catch.
Okay.
But, yeah, they're really rarely seen. Because they live so deep underwater, and they don't survive in captivity because of that.
Because they can't possibly be put deep enough?
Yeah, so they're used to the deep water depth, so any of them that have been tried to put in an aquarium have died very quickly.
I'm going to go with a 1.
You want these gone?
Yeah, these bring nothing to the table. I'm out. Give me a 1.
But yeah, goblin shark, one of the other sharks out there.
These are stupid. I don't know what purpose they solve.
Yeah, they're just out there in the ocean doing their thing.
Have they ever even been in movies?
I
feel like you're an ugly shark if you don't even get in any movies.
I don't think he's been in movies. I think they have based some stuff in, like, what was that? Pacific Rim, I think something was based off it.
Pacific Rim, that was a movie like Aliens and stuff, right?
Yeah, but I think that demon monster thing was, like, kind of based off it.
Okay, well, that makes sense. 1 out of 10 for the goblin shark. It's a stupid-looking shark. It's a stupid-looking idiot. Stupid. Hour 2 in the books. We'll kick off hour 3 with headlines. Let's talk sports on Fan Run Radio.
My name is John Reed, and for years, people made fun of me for not drinking beer. I tried to find some replacements, but they were all far too sugary and left me feeling bad. Lucky for me, I found Truly Hard Seltzer. It's refreshing with only 1 gram of sugar. You truly love to see it.
It's the dawn of a new game day, and Truly Hard Seltzer is subbing in for light beer. With 5% ABV, only 100 calories, and that's light and refreshing. Game day with Truly Hard Seltzer. Drink what you truly want. Hard Seltzer Beverage Company, drink responsibly.
Go, go, power. Rankings. Go, go, power. Rankings. Rankings. Rankings.
All right, Cam, you got your list ready?
I do.
All right, let's see what you got. I'm interested to see what your top 5 favorite reality TV shows are.
All right, so at number 5, I have Pimp My Ride.
Okay, so you're going just of all time.
Yeah, I'm going all time.
Okay.
Are you going, like, on TV still?
I went on TV still, but it's fine. You do yours.
Okay, I was going all time.
I don't know how much mine would actually change if I went all time anyways. Like, my top five's pretty firm. Like,
okay.
I guess I didn't put The Real World on here. I would have maybe put The Real World as one of the OGs. I didn't put it, but that would be the really only change I would make.
Okay, well, I went Pimp My Ride at five. It used to be ridiculous watching the wild stuff they would shove in people's cars.
Yeah.
So that was always entertaining.
Did you like Pimp My Ride more than Cribs, I assume? Or was Cribs on your list, too?
I liked Pimp My Ride more, I think. I just thought it was more absurd. They're, like, sticking aquariums in people's cars and things like that.
Yeah.
It just was wild to see. But, yeah, that's my number five. And number four, I got Hell's Kitchen. I love me some Gordon Ramsay. I really like him yelling at people. And I really like seeing, like, the progression of these chefs that he whips into shape and actually becoming, like, really good, like, at running restaurants and things like that. I have fun with that. Like to cook, kind of, so I really enjoy cooking shows. And so at number three, I have Kitchen Nightmare.
Okay.
It's even better when he goes into somebody's business where they think they're so good at what they're doing, and he just yells and tears them down. It's really fun for me to watch that. I really enjoy him yelling at those people, and it just blows my mind how, like, dumb some of those people are, and they can't, like, see what they're doing wrong.
You talking about this is making me reevaluate my list. Not for those shows, but for another one, but I don't know if I have a fifth one I could take. I don't know if I have one I could take off.
And then number two for me, I got Shark Tank.
Okay.
I love Shark Tank. That's really cool. Really love the business aspects of that. Teaches you a little bit about business when you're watching it too, if you don't, you know, have a huge, like, mindset about it. And some of these inventions are crazy.
And for that reason, I'm out.
I'm out. But yeah, no, it's a good show, and I think it's had some success with some people for sure. Like, some of those products from, like, the early seasons, like, actually ended up being pretty successful. So I think that's a good show. And number one for me, I got Chopped. I love Chopped. I love the competitive cook-offs. And, oh, yeah, it's just, I just love the intensity of it. And you get so into it. Like, I couldn't win that competition. But then you'll see me getting mad at somebody trying to make ice cream with 5 minutes left, knowing it's not going to work. Step away from the ice cream machine. Do something else. But, yeah, you just get in the Chopped. It's an intense show. Love Chopped. And, yeah, that's probably my list.
Yeah, as you were talking about that, it sounds like you're heavy on the cooking shows.
Yeah, I do like – that's where I lean towards with reality TV.
I get a feeling people are going to be mad that you didn't put, like, the Great British Bake Off or whatever. I know a lot of people like that one on Netflix. I don't watch cooking shows. See, I'm the opposite. Yeah. No cooking shows on mine. But when you were talking about the anger and whipping people into shape, I really wish I could have made – room or made it a six pack and put, like, Bar Rescue on there. I spent a lot of weekend days back in the day watching Bar Rescue marathons where Taffer just goes in there yelling at people and yelling at the there's always one bad employee that wants to try him. He has to whip them into shape.
Yep.
Has to tell the owner, you could do it your way or my way, but your way is putting you out of business.
that's what Ramsay does too, and it's the best. It's the best to watch.
But I will admit, like, Bar Rescue went a little bit was taken away whenever, like, they did something like Tennessee and people were like, I know this bar. And immediately after they left, either this place went out of business or they went right back to the old style. Like, so it's like, I don't know the sincerity of the show. I don't know if it's actually reality or they're just scripting.
See, that's the good thing with Kitchen Nightmares. They always, like, go back and check on the people and they update you on if they ended up failing or if they're still successful. So
yeah, there was some other ones on True TV I used to like that I felt like was reality, but then I realized it wasn't. Like Lizard Lick Towing, I really liked that one until they just went way too far.
Oh, I should put, like, Cops on here.
Way too far. Yeah, Cops too, although... Can we... yeah.
Or what's that live show, though?
Live PD, I think is what it's called, right?
Okay, yeah.
Number five for me, with all due respect to Bar Rescue and Lizard Lick Towing, I went with American Idol.
Okay.
I went with American Idol. I gave it some credit for being the original. Mm-hmm. It was the original over here in America. It started the movement, but also... It's the one I watch still. I know people like The Voice. I know people like America's Got Talent or whatever. But Katy Perry, you know my thoughts about Katy Perry. And I'll be happy to inform you, Cam, in case you haven't seen her lately, the long hair is back.
Yep.
Not all the way back.
She's pregnant.
She is pregnant now, which, coincidence, I think not. She started growing the hair back out, and then her man Orlando Bloom was like, okay, we can do this now. Short hair even, he was like, I don't know, I'm good on this. But American Idol, I really liked the version on ABC. Lionel Richie, Luke Bryan, and Katy Perry. At first, I didn't like them when they put them together. But there's some chemistry there. And Lionel's just like everyone's grandpa. Mm-hmm. And Lionel's just so warm and charming for everybody. And Luke Bryan, don't really like his music, but he seems like a pretty cool dude. Katie, they put her front and center for a reason. I don't know. I don't much like it when she talks too much, to be honest. Mm. But you know that she is a superstar. But also, she's nice to look at.
She's a superstar.
She's a superstar on and off the mic. On and off the mic. It gets my number five spot. Number four, I'll go with Shark Tank, just because, like you said, it's nice to see some business side of it and to watch the negotiations work out. And I like it when they find deals. I like it. You know, you get the heartfelt stories.
Yeah.
You get the heartfelt stories of, I need this money for this reason. We're so close. And you think and hope that these people are accomplishing their dreams and they got these really great ideas and they have a place to put these off. Have you ever used anything off of Shark Tank? Because I haven't.
I don't, but I don't remember what I looked up, but I think a few months ago I looked up some of the successful stuff, but it was like brands I recognized.
Okay, so it's stuff so actually selling and stuff. Like, I just have never actually used anything off of Shark Tank. But some of the stuff are brilliant. Like, there was the one guy who had, like, the little piece of rubber thing, the, like, piece of pad that you put in between your car. That way stuff won't fall in between your seats. I'm like, oh, it's brilliant.
Yeah, no, I do remember that. Oh,
the double-sided bottles was an idea that me and my friend had for a long time of, like, we wanted to do peanut butter. Like, you know, the peanut butter is always stuck at the bottom, so if we could just undo it from the bottom, like, we could just get all the peanut butter without getting our hands dirty. And then they came up with that idea. So I like Shark Tank.
I Googled the most successful Shark Tank products, and number one is the Scrub Daddy.
The Scrub Daddy?
It's a reusable super sponge in the shape of a smiling face. Okay, yeah, I know what that one is. Like, the sponges look like smiley faces.
Okay, I haven't seen those, but it looks as if they got five-star ratings on, like, all the 5 to 4.5-star ratings with a bunch of ratings.
I have seen those in, like, a store before. Okay.
Okay, maybe I'll buy a Scrub. Maybe I'll buy a Scrub Daddy. One. Found it in 2012, so I guess that was towards the beginning of Shark Tank. But I'll give it my number four spot. Number three, I went with Big Brother. Mm-hmm. Big Brother could carry you through the summer, which I don't know. Are they going to do an episode, a season of Big Brother this summer?
Maybe they could do it kind of how, like you know, we had the news alert, the Germans three. And stuff didn't hear of anything. So like,
well, right, but they didn't. Like the virus hadn't spread yet, but can you take people in the house now and go in and – I guess just test them all before
and
quarantine
them.
Hey, you can come in because we're going to need content. So we test you, we quarantine you. You don't get to leave, and then you go in the house. Would you go into a house right now? Would being on Big Brother right now be great or awful?
Well, if they told me, I think it'd almost be an escape. Like
right, but like
if you're not getting,
if you were in there though, you'd be worried about your family. You'd be worried about how bad the world got when you got out. That would be pretty crazy to go away for 3 months, and like when you get out, like what the hell is the world going to look like?
Yeah, no, that would be super interesting, yeah. Man, yeah, that'd be a game changer. You get out, the world be completely different. Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. Like, would you do it? I put it at number three. I like Big Brother. It's good and bad, though. It's a double-edged sword. There's a lot of episodes. You get 3 episodes a week, which is good and bad. Good and bad, you know, it's constant entertainment. It's constant content. But at the same time, it's a lot to keep up with. So I put it behind its predecessor, the OG on CBS, Survivor. Still holding it down. Mm-hmm. War of the Winners. This has been a great season. Survivor, an innovator. It gets the number two spot. Like I said, I would have probably tried to put The Real World on here at some point just because of how innovative it was, but I did have it represented at number one. The greatest American sport still going on right now is The Challenge, and it's back tonight, 8 o'clock, MTV. I'm pumped. I'm pumped. It's my favorite reality show. You get a mixture of the real world. Like, hey, they're in the house. They got to thrive. They got to do things. Now, they don't have to go work, but they compete. So it gives a sports thing. Physical stuff, puzzles, things like that. I love it. It's my favorite. It's back tonight.
Okay.
Number five, American Idol. Number four, Shark Tank. Number three, Big Brother. Number two, Survivor. Number one, The Challenge. Back tonight.
The ring stuff was actually on Shark Tank. Like the cameras.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I have one of those. Never mind.
Apparently that was on Ring or on Shark Tank at one point.
Which shark got it?
I don't think they actually invested in it though. Like I think it was one of those that
they
blew
passed.
Off. It says.
What the hell are you doing, Mark Cuban?
It says they faced a lineup of sharks who could barely keep their eyes open. Only one even made an offer. O'Leary.
O'Leary
was the only one to make an offer.
Is that Mr. Wonderful?
I think so, but yeah, nope. Nobody else even like, yeah. Nobody bought into it, and it ended up being successful, so they whiffed on that one.
Okay.
Man, yeah, Cuban didn't even offer for that one. What is he doing?
I don't know. We're the who are the owners? You know, the theory of the Mavericks and all their white European players. I wonder if. Never mind.
The guy's name is James Siminoff, okay. who's the CEO. I don't know. Nobody accepted it on the show.
Let's move on. All right. You said we got what coming up? Top 10. You said you found something somewhere.
Oh yeah. CBS did an article on the top 10 college football coaches under 45.
Okay. We will talk about the top college football coaches under the age of 45 coming up next.
My name is John.
All right, so what are we looking at here? The top 10 college football coaches under the age of 45.
Yep. Yeah, okay. That's what CBS did an article on, I guess. I guess it's just the up-and-comers in the...
Who wrote this? Was it Dodd?
It was... Yep, Dennis Dodd.
Moron.
But yeah, I guess it's just looking at some of the up-and-comers in the... I guess country as a whole, coach-wise.
Okay.
I'm
having a trouble like getting a starting point of who is even under the age of 45 still. Like, because, you know, the guys that you equate to being that have all gotten over it. Like, Dabo Swinney is 50. James Franklin's 48. So, like, I'm trying to figure out who is 45 to guess this, I guess.
Well, there is three coaches from the Big 12, two from the Big 10, two from the SEC, and one from the ACC, and two from non-Power 5. If that gives you any sort of idea.
Well, Jeremy Pruitt's 45. Did he get the nod here?
He did not make the list.
Jeremy Pruitt didn't get the nod of best coaches under the age of 45.
He did not.
And you said how many are in the SEC?
Two.
Did Lane Kiffin get the nod here?
He did. He comes in at number 8.
Lane Kiffin's 44. Which it is crazy to think about the different level of resume, Lane Kiffin versus Jeremy Pruitt.
Yeah.
Like, Lane Kiffin's had how many head coaching jobs?
He's been everywhere, at every level. Still,
and he's 44, whereas Jeremy Pruitt's in heading into year 3 of his only head coaching job. So that seems kind of crazy to think about the difference in resumes. Okay, let's start here, just for comparison's sake. Like, are we actually thinking Lane Kiffin is better than Jeremy Pruitt?
I'd have to see. I don't think I could make that call right now.
I think that's fair. I mean, like, Lane Kiffin won a couple big games at USC.
Yeah.
Won a couple big games at USC. They beat down that Oregon team. They went 10-2, but, you know, that was the only highlights of the USC tenure. At Florida Atlantic, they did what they were supposed to do. It wasn't like they beat up any – they didn't beat any of the teams above them in level of competition.
Yeah, I just kind of want to see what he does at Ole Miss, like – I mean, I don't think, you know, there's only so much you can do at Ole Miss, even though they have shown you can win if you cheat a little bit, but.
So that's one coach under the age of 45 in the SEC. You said there's another one
in the top
10?
There's another one, yep.
Just running through the teams, I mean, in the West, nobody's under the age of 45 in the West outside of Lane Kiffin, right?
That's probably correct.
Who coaches Ole Miss now?
Kiffin's at Ole Miss.
Kiffin's at Ole Miss. Duh. Yeah. Duh. So yeah, nobody under the age of 45 there in the SEC East. Is Dan Mullen under the age of 45?
If he is not listed.
Well, then he is not, because he would be number one. Is Kirby? I guess Kirby.
It is Kirby. Okay, he comes in at number 2.
Okay, I have no problem with Kirby being ranked ahead of Pruitt right now. I have no problem with that. Kiffin, I feel like I have a problem with it, but like I said, when you just judge the difference in resumes.
Yeah, he kind of just gets the nod by default almost.
And, like, you know, maybe I'm overrating the end of our season at the end of last year, but I thought Pruitt did some good things last year.
No, I agree. And like
I wonder
I said,
how different
like
that would be had Tennessee not lost to Georgia State. How different that would be on the list. Had they not lost to Georgia State, or had they pulled the upset against Alabama?
He probably would have snuck on this list for sure, I think.
All right, so you got Kirby Smart at number 2. You have Lane Kiffin at number 9. That's the SEC.
Number 8, yeah.
Number 8, that's the SEC.
Yep.
What conference is number 1 from?
Big 12.
Oh, Lincoln Riley.
Yep, yeah. Lincoln Riley is number 1. He's 36. So he's
Lincoln Riley will be number one.
He's
on this
well list. Under 45.
He will be number one on this list for a long time. Do we give credit to Lincoln Riley for being better than Kirby Smart?
I mean, I would say, I guess they've been to the same points, but I guess Kirby did make the actual championship game.
Right. And beat Lincoln Riley head-to-head.
Yeah.
When he had Baker Mayfield. Lincoln Riley blew a 17-point lead. Kirby has to navigate the SEC. Granted, the East is easier, but he still has to navigate the SEC versus the Big 12. I would probably take I don't know.
That's a tough one. I mean,
Kirby's success. I mean, if we're giving Kirby's success at Alabama, like any part of this, then I would probably take Kirby. But I don't have a problem, I guess, with Lincoln being graded ahead of him.
He's 36 and 6 in his three seasons.
Kirby is?
Lincoln.
Lincoln is. What's Kirby? I guess he had the 7 and 5
43 and
year.
12 in four seasons.
Yeah, he had the 5 losses.
Half of Lincoln Riley's losses have been in the college football playoff semifinals.
Well, I would say that's a pretty good sign, but I'd also say that's because they don't play anybody.
Yeah. Yeah. So they're averaging like a loss a year and then lost in the playoffs.
And also when they do play somebody, they get beat. Like the very first moment they go up in class, they lose.
Yeah.
He's yet to win a playoff game, right? He's 0-3. No problem with that, though. All right, we got Kirby at number 2. Who's number 3? Like what conference we in?
Big 10.
The Big 10? I mean, it's not Scott Frost, is it?
It is not.
Okay. Did he make the top 10?
He did not.
Is he under the age of 45? Big 10. Okay, so Harbaugh is not under the age. Ryan Day?
It's Ryan Day.
Well, that's weird because the one rankings we had from The Athletic didn't even put Ryan Day in the top 25.
I know.
Of, like, coaches in general.
Yeah. Yeah, it's they're like, the only thing – the article says the only thing holding him back is experience. He doesn't have anything on his resume to be ranked higher, even though he's number 3. But then his first season, they talk about he won the Big Ten, college football playoff, yada, yada, yada.
I don't know how many other coaches could have done what he did, just stepping in for Urban and not missing a beat. But
I mean, yeah, he brought in Justin Fields is one of the things I'm making here.
I would say that a good handful of coaches could have easily done that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
Like, I don't know how many, but I would imagine.
Keep the train moving, yeah.
I'd imagine it's like 10 at least or so. But Ryan Day, okay. He's going to have success, right? Like, I mean,
yeah,
if Ryan Day is not a good coach, we won't find out for a long time. We will find out by the way they choke in the playoffs. That's the way we'll find out they're not any good because as of right now, they're going to keep dominating that conference. And like just they're going to win 10 games just by rolling out the Buckeye helmet with all the little stickers on them.
Yeah,
all right. I have no problem with the list there. Number 4?
You would never guess number 4, probably. It's a non-Group 5 team.
It's a Group 5 team?
Yeah, Group 5 team. Mountain West.
Is it the guy from San Diego State?
It is not.
From the Mountain West. Who's the best team in the Mountain West? I don't know. Who is it? I just tell me.
Boise State's head coach.
Okay.
Brian Harsin.
Okay. Yeah, never would have guessed that.
Yeah.
Okay, we'll see. I mean, you followed two really good coaches at Boise State. I don't know if I'm going to say you're the top.
Yeah.
I'm taking.
I mean, he's 6 years removed from Chris Peterson.
Yeah, but I mean, Bronco Mendenhall came in right behind him, right?
Not at Boise. Bronco didn't go to
Bronco
Boise.
Bronco's BYU. Okay, yeah. Sorry.
But, yeah, no, he came in right after.
Okay, so he's kept it rolling.
He was the offensive coordinator Peterson had at Boise, so he kept it moving.
Okay. I thought he was the third in line. I got BYU confused. Okay, sorry about that. I would still okay, I guess. Like, nice to see a Group 5 guy getting love. Jeremy Pruitt's a better football coach than him.
Yeah.
Like, Jerry Pruitt doing what he did at Tennessee in the second half of the year, to me, is more impressive, especially, like I said, if you add in accolades as a coordinator, what Jeremy Pruitt did at Alabama and Florida State, worth more to me than him being the offensive coordinator at Boise State. But either way, all right, number 5?
Number 5 is in the Big Ten.
Another Big Ten guy. And it's not Scott Frost.
No, another guy almost came here.
I know it's not Kirk Ferentz because he is well over the age of 45. He's been at Iowa for 45 years. You said almost came here?
Yep.
Shiano? No, Shiano's
people wanted to come here.
Shiano's not under the age of 45. Who?
PJ Fleck.
Okay. I don't know if I would consider people wanted him to come here. People were split on that idea. PJ Fleck.
Yeah, 39 years old. I guess 53 and 37, 7 seasons in.
PJ Fleck, what year is he in Minnesota? Was he in year 3 last year? Or was that year 2? I believe it was year 3, right?
I think so. I don't know why it lists him in. I think it lists all 7 seasons he's been like a head coach for some reason.
Yeah, it does. I mean, his overall record's 53 and 37, and if you remove the 1-11 year, I mean, it looks a lot better at 52 and 26. He's been at Minnesota for 3 years. In his third year, he did what you're supposed to do. You took the big jump. They went and they won the Outback Bowl. So I have no problem with PJ Fleck. If I was PJ Fleck, I'd be like, put me over the Boise State guy. But PJ Fleck, so far, has proven it. He took the jump in year 3. We'll see if he can sustain there. And there is a ceiling at Minnesota, I would imagine. But, you know, it took him 4 years at Western Michigan to build them into a 13-1 team. And it took him 3 years to get Minnesota to 11-2. So no qualms there.
Yep. Number 6, another one you probably wouldn't guess.
Just give it to me
it's
then.
The UCF head coach, Josh
Heupel?
Heupel, yeah.
Josh Heupel is not better than Jeremy Pruitt.
Yeah, they're just like,
and if I'm Scott Frost, I'm like, really? You're putting Josh Heupel above me? I'm Scott Frost. I built UCF. What the hell has Josh Heupel done at UCF? They lost games. I didn't do that.
Yep, he's 22-4 in 2 seasons.
If I'm Eric Frost, Scott Frost, excuse me, I combined Eric Crouch and Scott Frost. And made them Eric Frost. But if I am Scott Frost, I look at Josh Heupel as if I am Big Red and he is Kirsten Dunst. He is Torrance and Bring It On. Like, you're ruining everything I built.
Yeah.
We stole all this from the East Compton Clovers, and now you're running it into the ground. You couldn't just keep winning, Josh? You started losing games? No. Josh Heupel, as the, sixth best coach in the country, is a farce, and Dennis Dodd is proving to be the idiot that I've always known he is.
Not sure you'll like number 7 either.
Okay.
From the Big 12.
Just give it to me.
Tom Herman.
I mean, depending on who 8, 9, and 10 are.
Well, 8 was Kiffin.
Okay, yeah, we knew that.
9 is our former friend over at Memphis, Mike Norvell, who's down at Florida State.
Okay.
And then number 10 is Neil Brown.
Neil Brown, that's nice of him to get some respect. Nice of him to get some respect. And who did you say I had a problem with?
I said maybe Tom Herman at 7.
Nah, I mean, I don't know. I don't know if he. I don't know how good he is. I don't know how good he is. He won the Sugar Bowl.
Yeah.
He had a good years at Houston, but I mean, like, I feel like he's underachieved so far at Texas, right?
Yeah. I would think so, at least from what they expected from him. Yeah, that's their list of under 45. So
if I'm Jeremy Pruitt, I'm like, come on, seriously.
Yeah.
Josh Heupel, that's the one I have the biggest complaint with.
That one, yeah.
That's the one that
I
just look at and say, what are we doing here? Like, I'll give PJ Fleck his credit. I will give Boise State's coach his credit. Josh Heupel, I'm looking at and saying, what are we doing here?
Yeah, he regressed that team.
I mean, they're still good. They went 12-1 his first year, lost the Fiesta Bowl, and then last year went 10-3.
Yeah, so they're 9-3
in the regular season. So yeah, like, they're on the decline. He's 22-4 overall, but I mean, like, again.
Yeah, Frost wasn't losing games there. Yeah.
If I'm Scott Frost, I'm like, seriously, my star. Poor Scott Frost, by the way. Talk about your star fading fast.
Yeah.
You went from, like, hottest name.
Is he under 45?
Yeah, he's 45 exactly. Okay. I checked to make sure. He is 45 exactly. Imagine going from most sought-after coach to that. Is it under the age of 45 or 45 and younger?
I think it's under the age of 45 because, like, the highest they have listed is 44.
Okay.
So I think.
Well, that just ruined all my arguments this segment with Scott Frost and Jeremy Pruitt because they're both actually 45. Okay, so I was thinking 45 and younger. So, okay. Still, Josh Heupel, still, I'm mad about that. But, okay, If it's under the age of 45 and not 45 and younger, maybe that changes things a little bit. Okay.
Yeah, probably. I'm not sure if they're taking their age like last season or what.
What it'll be for, yeah.
I guess it's going into next year. Because, yeah, they got Smart at 44.
I don't know
Kiffin's
what other coaches.
44, Herman's 44.
Yeah, I don't know what other coaches are 45 that just missed the cut, like where they would have put Pruitt or where they would have put Frost, but.
Yeah.
Okay. We'll do last call on the other side. It's Talk Sports on Fan Run Radio.